Hey everyone, welcome back to Lighthouse London podcast. I'm Tom here in the hot seat this week. I'm joined by Alex Orlich from Penta. Hey.
Hi all.
How's it going?
Yeah, everything fine.
Cool. Yeah, all good over here. So you're joining us from sunny or cold or wet Berlin, is that right?
Actually, very sunny Berlin.
Very sunny.
Well, today we have a perfect time after a week of suffering and rain and changes. Now we are more or less pretty stable.
Awesome. So you're the CTO for Penta, is that right?
Right.
Cool. So why don't we start off with a little bit of a background? We're not going to be talking about Penta in massive detail today, but give us a bit of background about the company and what you guys do.
Okay. Well, Penta is a business bank. We are a startup. We are less than a year young or old, whatever you prefer, and we are focused on a business banking in Germany. So we are trying to launch a first fully digital business bank in Germany. And now we are in a stage where we already had some investments. We had a pre-seed, seed round, and now we are trying to pick up some more funds so we can meet our plans, which are more or less in September to be already live. So now we are prepared to launch our pre-beta version, which is aimed to, let's say, controlled environment, controls user sets, where we are going to test our concept and try to make it perfect till September. So more or less that's our business now.
Yeah. Awesome. Sounds like a lot of work's gone into that so far. I know from chatting to you previously, you guys have been doing loads of work in the background on your platform, all that kind of stuff. I think we're probably going to have someone else from Penta on in the future to talk about the business as a whole. But today, from when we were previously talking, we thought an interesting topic might be to talk about the difference between development and tech in a startup and that of a corporate environment, because you've had a fairly long career already and have worked on both sides of that, right?
Right. Actually, I had a much more experience in a corporate world. Almost 20 years of working in different corporations. Actually, I also had my own consultancy, and Penta is actually my first real startup experience. So that's more or less my experience and background in this sense. So I have much more in the corporate world than in a startup.
Nice. So, I mean, a lot of what we do is obviously working with startups to help them kind of build their own business, but we also spend a lot of time working with corporate clients to kind of help them be more startup, or you know, adopt the kind of processes that they see startups using. So it's interesting to have this conversation with someone who's experienced both sides of it, and actually having you be more on the corporate side is kind of unique as well. Let's start with kind of, you mentioned a few things you've done over the course of your career, but let's go into more detail about what you've done over the course of being a developer and working your way up to your position now.
Okay, so I started like most of the IT people as a developer. Actually, like 20 years ago, I graduated and I won my master in computer science, electrical engineering. So I started immediately working as a programmer, developer, and in a course of years, I was raising, let's say it like that, abstraction of my target. And instead of only programming, I started making some drafts, some nice diagrams, and trying to make some plan for my own work. Later, I did the same for other people. Then this famous concept of software architecture evolved more or less in that time, like 15 years ago. And I started immediately with the modeling, with the architecting solutions, with making more structure of the system, and giving work to other people than developing myself. So I switched, let's say, my focus in that sense. Also, I did a lot of analysis, work with product owners, product managers, and clients, customers, users, and the other side, let's say, of the product development. And I was translating their wishes and requirements into the more technical artifacts, which later to be used by a development process. I also did a lot of project management. So I think these are the two main lines currently for me, project management on one side and architecture on the other side. And I think it's a really good practice to continuously both of them and to have a overview on the project of the project administration in the same time as the technical aspects of the project. So that's more or less the way I work. When I change my work, I try to work a little bit in administration, project management, and later in architecture. So I don't lose my focus. I don't lose the tendencies, because we all know how quickly IT is growing and changing in all its aspects. So to lose a couple of years in a technical stage, you know, you are almost lost in a,
on a radar. Yeah, so, not wrong at all. I kind of haven't developed for a little while now, and it's amazing how much you forget quite quickly. And tech doesn't let up, and it certainly moves past you. So it's fair to say you've had a really wide experience across all kind of aspects of product development and development itself. What kind of companies were you working for previously?
I worked actually of all kinds of companies. I wouldn't exaggerate to say that, because that's a challenge for me. I'm not type of person who would spend a life working in a, I don't know, any type of industry like banking or whatever, minery, mining or whatever. So it was a challenge for me to keep changing after it doesn't mean after each two weeks to change the sector industry, but after a couple of years. I always felt the need to change a little bit aspect, to learn something more, to make more analysis in some other industry. So I was working in a banking, in telecommunications, in mining, even in different continents. I spent some years in South America when I ran my own consultancy business. And in context of this business, I had an opportunity to work especially with a lot of different kind of customers interested in software development, process improvement, and software architecture and things like that. So I had a pretty wide experience in terms of industry.
Nice. Wow. Sounds like you've done loads. Sounds great. So you're working for a startup now. How did that come about? Like, how did you decide to take the shift, or was it a big risk to work for a startup?
Of course. Well, working for a startup is always a risk. It's like to ask, is it a risk to put a bet on, I don't know, any kind of weaker football club in comparison with some bigger and already established one? So, of course, it's a risk, but I'm that kind of person, so it wasn't a big issue for me to run a little bit of risk.
Yeah.
Actually, it was all about a challenge and excitement for me. I wanted something more flexible, something more, let's say, challenging in the sense of a routine and excitement. I wanted also a kind of more influence on what we are doing, and more flexibility, and of course more speed in development. So that were more or less the reasons I decided to leave the corporate world. Then I met the guys from Penta, and I jumped in a pretty early stage of the business. So that's the history.
You mentioned more influence and more speed there. It's probably, is it worth kind of trying to define, and obviously this will depend on which company you're working up for, whether that's a startup or a established corporate, but what are the kind of main differences you've seen from both sides of that picture?
Well, it's a really long story.
I thought so.
But before I start, I would like to point out something.
Yep.
I read a lot about differences and then between corporates and startups, and I have an impression that maybe it's not very clear from the beginning what is the basic difference. And actually, somebody could think that we are talking about completely two different kind of concepts, talking about corporate or startup. But I think more accurate would be to say that a corporate and startup are more or less the same thing in different stages and or different phases of development.
Of course.
So startup is a Will, if everything goes well and if it evolves good, if they manage to do what they imagined in the beginning, they will go closer and closer with each day to a corporate world and a corporation. It doesn't mean that they have to convert completely to a, let's say, a rigid, typical corporation, but it's definitely something they're trying to reach, or to at least to have an opportunity to choose.
Yeah.
Should we keep our startup culture and flexibility and all the characteristics of a startup, or maybe we could adopt with the time also the practices which are not very common in startup, and on the other side are totally typical in a corporate world. So it's kind of decision. But in order to have this decision to make, they have the startup have a lot homework to do in order to be mature enough to be able to decide if they're going to follow the same route and try to be, let's say, alternative, or just gradually take the route of a corporate development. So I don't know if it's clear to everybody, but I have a feeling that it's not very clear when I read some articles and when I read about the topic. So that's the first thing I wanted to point out.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Definitely completely agree with you there, you know.
Yeah. So out of this introduction, we can derive practically all of the differences or most of the differences between two environments, let's say, startup environment and corporate environment. Mm-hmm. And there are, as already told, a lot of them, but most of them are derived exactly from this maturity level, which is completely different in a startup and in corporate. Also startups, we can talk about startups in a really, really early stage before any important investments and things like that, when they're in the stage of developing idea, there may be only one person in a garage or two persons. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about the startups which are already on Series B level with maybe 2 years of experience and that already have some practices completely implemented and have a visibility of not only a couple of months, but maybe even a year or something more, and they're almost halfway to be able to leave the startup world, let's say. And what would be the frontier actually between this crucial point, or maybe it's not such a rigid frontier between those worlds, but I would say it's at the moment when you don't depend on investments and you start to generate your own cash flow, you start to be profitable. So the first difference would be this this maturity level. Mm-hmm. Corporations tend to be mature, already formed institutions, very rigid with a overall stable, with a stable cash flow, with a stable market. Maturity and stability is the biggest difference between the corporate and the startup. On the other side, in startup, it's still forming. Not even the product is clearly defined from the first day. We can have some basic idea what we should do. In the case of Penta, it wasn't different. So the guys, I wasn't there in this first time, but they had some completely other idea of where. Of course, it was fintech, it was banking, not something completely different, but we definitely ended up on something that they couldn't imagine in the first day. But a startup is unstable, uncertain. Sometimes it's a matter of days if the startup is going to survive or maybe abandon the idea, or maybe one day we are all happy going on and really hard, and the next day we are like depressive, you know, we are...
I've heard that story, yeah. And you're completely right, right? So an established company is trying to predict growth and trying to predict the future, whereas a startup might not know that at the end of next week they'll completely change a product and completely change focus and direction. And that's the kind of excitement and the ability being a smaller team and not having that big workforce and not having all those processes in place that allow them to do that.
Definitely. And when you're, well, the both sides, it's they have pro and contra, of course.
Sure.
So being stable and mature gives you this relaxed feeling that you don't have to worry for your, let's say, basic needs. You don't have to worry for your work. You don't have to worry for your vacations, for your some benefits or other things like that. But in the startup, everything is different. You know, you don't know anything. And both have good and bad things. Good things with this instability is the potential improvement. You can optimize, you can still make changes and drastically changes in order to make everything better, much better, and much much more efficient. In the corporate world, all these changes are much harder.
Mm. Well, it makes much, much more sense, you know, if you've got a big workforce and a complicated product that's very mature and has had lots of investment in that, both in terms of development time and money and all that kind of thing, that's going to be really hard to change. So like you're saying, when you're a startup and you've got a young product that you're building that it isn't as difficult, then you can hash that around and you can change it a lot. But certainly when you've got an established business that's running software for, you know, years, that kind of code base, that kind of the tech side of things is going to be much harder to go into, and that small change that you might think's simple to make, it just isn't going to be. That's not the way it works, is it?
Yeah, and especially banking is a great example. Corporate world has something that's historical things that they are pulling ages behind them, like systems. For example, banks have definitely, some banks have systems for several decades old. So it's simply not very easy to get rid of them, and they're postponing this moment. Maybe they had plans, or they're having plans to modernize the thing. Actually, they are modernizing, but more than replacing the old parts. They're just building layers around the layers and new layers and new layers. And internally, you can just like an old tree, you know, when you cut it, you can see all the edges, circle. Wow. You know, it's something like that in a bank as well. You can find definitely decades old generations of hardware, software, and everything. And it's almost impossible to get out now.
We've seen this on probably smaller scales, but you scratch underneath the surface of these things and you'll find a system, a legacy system built in technologies that are way out of date, that, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, even millions of people might be using. And just navigating off that, getting that user base off that system into a new version of it, or even just a new product, the job there is just so huge compared to you guys right now who are building a brand new system from start. You've architected it correct. You know, you guys having experts and being great software developers know how to build this stuff now. But even decisions you make at the moment could affect how Penta is in 5-10 years time, you know?
Definitely. It will. Not only they can, but that it will influence. And we should learn on experience we have from before. And there also an interesting thing. When you think about a banking architecture, system architecture and the systems, everybody thinks about a bunch of background tasks, performing some calculations, approvals, conversions, migrations, etc. But actually, it's only a consequence of this nature of growing. So instead of replacing the part which is obsolete or too old, we make in bank is a typical to bank make another job, another task, which is just taking this information, convert them, and send it to a new system. Hmm. So the whole banking architecture is practically it was built on this legacy reality they have, you know. So now I'm thinking, well, we don't need actually all these jobs and background works. Why should we do it? We are building a new thing. Why should I build something to work in the background if it can be online all the time? You know, we don't have this legacy to satisfy, to maintain, and to keep. We have the opportunity to build a fresh, completely new and uncommon financial, let's say, software architecture for banking systems. So it's an interesting aspect, you know.
And I suppose a big part of any kind of corporate or established product business is the need to support a big user base, right? Which is something that you guys will eventually want, but right now I suppose don't have a huge amount of people on your platform. And that people should never underestimate that, and the kind of energy that goes into keeping people happy, certainly ones who are using outdated equipment themselves and struggle with basic interaction with software, digital products. So even in the kind of development of Penta, the Penta product, are there things that you've built so far that you now look back on? I mean, how long have you been working on that exactly for? Like a year or so, did you say?
Well, a little bit less than a year. So okay. We had our first prototype, more proof of concept than prototype, we had in December. And since then, we are building our, let's say, real system, which is now at the point to have the first pre-beta version, which means to have some controlled users, but real users, not only our small group. So now it's for the difference of the prototype, it's completely in cloud, in a real infrastructure, which was built for many, 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 hopefully many users in the future. And that's an interesting topic that we mentioned before when we spoke a little bit about how the dynamics of the development and how big and how secure should we think making our architecture. So this is derived a little bit from this reality, uncertain reality. Why should you make in order to make a good system and to support a lot of users, you have to be a strong architect. You have to make a strong architecture. Mm. And in order to make a strong architecture, you need time and money and resources.
Yeah.
So on the other side, if we pick up the other extreme, let's start with a really small code base, which will support just a small user base and do it quickly so we can quickly get some investment. Then what's happening when we surprisingly have more users than we expected? Earlier than we expected.
Yeah.
It's probably even worse scenario than the first one. If you build something and you realize that you just cannot support this this user base, probably users will leave, you will have problems, stress, etc. So two completely different problems which are for example not there in a corporate development.
Yeah.
You know, in a corporate development I'm not thinking about the next day. So I'm not thinking about the budget as an architect. Of course somebody is thinking about the budget as well, but as an architect, software architect, I never had to think about the budget, I always have reasonably enough budget for all the things we needed, for the team, for the tools, for the licenses, for everything we need. So I was always thinking years in advance. Yeah. I was always thinking in a sense of many users, of our targeted quantity of users, not the users we are going to have in 2 months or in 3 months, but the users we are going to have in 2 years.
Yeah.
So you invest, you have the time and the energy to invest in a strong architecture that will be easily growing and evolving in the future.
Presumably that kind of unpredictability of how many users are going to be on your system, you know, at Penta or any startup, just means those decisions are really hard to make. And you probably have to make a bunch of compromises based around how you approach the architecture and build.
Definitely. You have to find a balance. Neither of two extremes are good for startup, definitely.
And now if we look at the kind of teams, I mean, how many developers have you got on your team at Penta?
Well, now we have internally we have two people we're working internally, and we have several companies which are working for us externally, remotely, and we are still searching for a perfect formula in this sense.
Yeah.
We are still building our internal. Our idea is to have a really small but powerful core. Development core of the individuals which are highly motivated, which are part of the of Penta, which feel Penta as their own company, and to build all the rest around this. And of course, as we are growing, we are defining these processes. We still don't have completely clear the situation or our development process. We are finding the formula still.
Still trying to document all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We try and do the same. It's difficult, though. It's always the thing that gets done last, right? But, I mean, are there any kind of obvious differences in the kind of makeup of teams between the two situations, or the skills across developers and people you've got in those sort of teams?
Well, I would say that one of the biggest differences between two worlds is definitely the human resources and teams.
Mm.
As you well told at the beginning, startup is a risky business.
Yep.
So it's not for everybody. So it's automatically only this will make a huge difference between the structure of the people in a startup and in a corporate.
Yep.
People who are not ready to run some risk will definitely not choose to work in a startup. So they're already chosen their way. And motivation in the first place. People in companies are motivated with a salary and benefits and this stability. People in startup are motivated more with a challenge, with the ability to influence, to create something, to make something new, to make the difference.
Mm,
so
yeah.
Of course, they are in nature, as a consequence, they're more proactive, they're more enthusiastic, they're more like agile.
Yes.
The people who prefer stability and a fixed salary and fixed working hours will be more conservative, more slow, more reactive than proactive. So there are huge differences in a structure of the teams in a startups and in a corporations.
Yeah, definitely. So kind of nice segue into talking about the idea of innovation and that kind of thing. So, well, startups are often trying to introduce innovative products to a market, something that will disrupt and, you know, change the game. I think corporates these days are trying to do the same. So we speak to a lot of people who are trying to make new products or take their products that have been around for a long time and introduce new innovative methods of making them better, different, and kind of competing with people like you, you know, young, fresh companies who are trying to do something really big. How do you think that's difficult in the corporate structure? Why does innovation not happen as easily?
Simply because they have they already have the routine. They have ages, or maybe not ages, but definitely decades of history and working. We already talked earlier
yep.
about that. They have some established processes, established people, established practices, established culture. The change is the most difficult thing in a human nature in general. When you have only one person to make a change, it's already difficult. And to make a change in this set of rigid structure is really a challenge. So of course it's directly the consequence why the corporations tend not to innovate too much. They have a customer base to satisfy, they have a customer support to make, they have to new versions to develop of the system they already know. In order to innovate, it's a big investment, it's a big let's say change of a rhythm, change of direction, and it's not easy to make. It's a big change.
Yeah, have you ever been in larger companies where they've tried to adopt a more innovative approach to stuff, or is that something that you've never experienced yourself?
Of course, they kind of try it all the time. You know, they're trying to find a formula to find the way to push some change. Sometimes they just try with a parallel project or large or huge project which would be run completely parallelly to their everyday work. And I think that's probably the only feasible way of trying to make such a brutal change in a company structure. So to make the decision to ensure a budget, of course, and to have enough money to have a huge, big, important running project in parallel, and trying to create something and try to see if that can rival their common everyday offer. And these kind of projects, I saw several. Most of them were not successful because normally, in order to make this work, it takes some time. Yeah. You know. And after some time, priorities come on the top again, you know, and they have some different troubles. So this is the first thing that will be cut off in a moment of problems.
Yeah, we've been in touch with people before who've been working in kind of large businesses who want to try and innovate, bring new products to the market, that kind of stuff. And they've done the same thing. So they've set aside a budget and a team and said, essentially, go off and be your own startup for some time. And, you know, here's some money, just burn through that. We don't care. This could be a failure. It could be, but it could be good. But then after a bit, it always kind of comes back to them saying, how well is this doing? And, you know, even 6 months in, which isn't enough for a proper startup to really, unless they're incredibly lucky to develop anything that's going to show massive return. And yeah, you're right, either budget gets pulled potentially because they're, you know, there's other stuff that's important, or they just look at how this kind of this breakaway business is doing and aren't seeing that immediate return on investment, so just pull the plug way too early in it, and they just have to commit to it a bit more, is often what I find.
And by the way, it's not that easy just to create a, let's say, startup inside a corporation. You know, it's not just about a decision to pick up 10 people, put them in the same room and tell them, now you can do whatever you want. You know, yeah. You have money, please do whatever, you know, you can use any technology you choose, propose something, give us good idea. It's not like that. Magic doesn't happen that way, you know.
No, of course not.
Maybe the thing which is making startups so special is this motivation, which is somehow hidden in the team, you know.
Yeah,
this enthusiasm that the team is has inside, this that's the only internally a person can be enough motivated to overcome all the problems. So is it really realistic to expect this kind of reality to create in a corporation? How to incentivize these people? How to give them this motivation? How to try to mimic this startup atmosphere, which is so natural in startups?
Well, it's very tough. It boils back to your point about, you know, it being the team that would go for this, and the fact that you're at risk of, you know, only having 2 weeks left, or, you know, and that's why everyone's working together to make this thing, this project that they're passionate about and really sold into the idea of making something great. If you're in a team who was just given, you know, X amount of thousands of pounds to sit in a room and come up with something, that there's no real risk there. You know, you're still going to keep your job even if it doesn't work. So maybe that's why, you know, that there isn't that passion behind it.
No, there is no passion. I don't think it's about the money. I definitely don't think it's about the money. It's about something that is maybe values, maybe some longer vision, maybe influence, something like that. And it's also not about the skill of the persons. It's not about picking up the best persons you have in a company and dedicate them to this kind of work. It's much more than just the persons or money or the freedom they have they're having in the work, or even that risk you're talking about. You know, that I must admit that this uncertainty and this lower moments of motivation are definitely not my favorite part of a startup life.
Of course.
So I would be happy to try to avoid these phases and be always on the positive side, you know.
I can understand that, definitely.
So, but the thing is that in a startup, it's regulated naturally.
Yeah.
Normally, it starts with one or two persons, which are two, and they will choose the next one. Mm. And after that, they will choose together the next one and the next one. And first 5, 10, and maybe even more people will be really, really, really carefully selected.
Of course, yeah.
And it's simply impossible that somebody tends too much out from this group, you know, in any kind of sense. They just must work together. This teamwork must it cannot be created. It's there or it's not there. So when a single person starts and try to bring a friend, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It will explode. If it works, okay, it will grow. And still, while it works, it will keep growing and growing. And all the elements which are impeding somehow, which are making problems in this growth, will be eliminated, probably by themselves. First, then kicked out. Actually, it doesn't happen too often to be kicked out of the startup. I think it's more reasonable that a person goes out alone because he doesn't fit in values in this kind of work. And this reality is what is making this motivation, which is making all the productivity and all the energy needed for a startup to succeed. And I don't know how to, let's say, mimic this in a corporate world, even with all the money and budget and time they can afford.
Mm, no, for sure. I think you're completely right about the team being so important. And you know, we're a small business. You wouldn't call us a startup, but a services business. We're you know, 9 people at the moment. The wrong person in there just is such a drain on the team. And if you have that wrong person come in, it can be, it's so much more than just having one person in the room who's not playing the game. It has so much more impact than that.
Yeah, definitely. And the time is too expensive for any startup. So
of course,
each day of distraction, each day of a little bit lower energy can be critical. So it's not enough to work even 100% of energy. You know, we must have to give average of more than 100% of energy in order to succeed. Though it's really like that.
Awesome. So that's great. I think that's loads of really good advice there, Alex. And I think anyone listening from both sides of the story there can learn a lot about development in both environments. Why don't you tell us where we can find you online and find out a bit more about Penta?
You can, for now, we have our definite final site, but you can find us off getpenta.com. We are also organizing some meetups. We had one a couple of weeks ago here in Berlin about how to raise money. We had some good, some really interesting guests, and it was a really nice discussion evolved around this. And so you can probably hear more about us in this sense in the future.
Definitely. Awesome. Well, that sounds brilliant. I'd advise everyone to go and check Penta out. We look forward to seeing the platform when it's finally launched, and I'm sure we'll have more about Penta on the podcast in the future. For anyone listening, please do go and check out the Lighthouse site, wearelighthouse.com. Loads more blogs, podcasts on there. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, all that kind of stuff, at We Are Lighthouse. We are there almost everywhere. So until next time, please tune back in and give us a listen. Chat to you again another time. See you later.